The Israelites are standing near the Jordan River. The time will soon come when they will cross over to possess the land that God is giving them. Yet before they do so, Moses has one last thing he has to say to them. And we find the last things that Moses has to say before Israel in the book of Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy comes from two Greek words, deuteros, nomos, second law, and it represents Moses' final address to Israel. It's a book of transitions, because in it, Moses will die and Joshua will lead the people. And Israel will cross the Jordan and possess the land, fulfill the promise in future books. But this is the end of the Pentateuch and the Torah. And it's the law restated, but with explanation. And it can really help us a lot in our understanding of what God intended for Israel. So let us therefore consider Deuteronomy. The speaker within Deuteronomy is certainly Moses. In Deuteronomy 31, 24 through 26, it is recorded that Moses wrote down the material of the book. And we can see in Matthew 19, Jesus says that Moses spoke, and it was in Deuteronomy 24. Despite all the jokes we want to make about Moses writing the account of his own death, there is some later editor who is adding on the story of his death. And also, we can see the hand of an editor at other places, where you can see there's a parenthetical comment, especially in the beginning of the book, trying to make explanations. And we know that this has to be some kind of monarchic time period editor, because he will make comments about how there were certain kings in places before there were kings in Israel. So based upon the best textual evidence that we have, Moses would have lived somewhere around 1450 BC. These events would therefore be somewhere closer to 1410 BC. Moses' address itself, the writing of the book, would be some of the last things that he would do before he dies. So the majority of the substance of Deuteronomy would have been written at that time. And the events that it talks about may have been even one day, one really long address, or not that long of a period of time being addressed here in terms of giving this law. So the original audience is Israel after the wilderness, and we can derive some understanding and lessons from it. And what it is another accounting of the law for Israel so they can understand it, or accounting of history and explanation of God's intentions for Israel. And we can see in many ways how it can point us also to Jesus and the new covenant. So when we look at Deuteronomy, we have some main sections here. The first three chapters rehearse the story of how Israel went from Sinai to the Jordan River. Chapter 4 through 11, there's some general exhortations. Chapters 12 through 26 set forth some specific legislation. We then have Moses' blessings and cursings in the covenant, Deuteronomy 27 through 30. The final blessings of Moses and his death in verses 31 through 34. As noted, Deuteronomy begins recounting the wilderness, the appointment of leaders at Sinai, the spies and the results of Israel's rebellion, passing by Edom and Moab, Sihon and Og, Reuben, Gad, half of Manasseh, and how they received the land of Transjordan, their obligations, how Moses pled to not have to go through what he's going to have to go through, the sentence he suffered. And all of this, it's very interesting to see that he is speaking to them, even though it is the new generation, as if they had been the ones who had already experienced these things. This is sometimes seen as some kind of contradiction or some kind of error, but it is probably the attempt to show this generation that they share in and participate in the same things their ancestors went through, as an indicator for future generations that they are to see themselves as sharing in all of these things. In Deuteronomy chapter 4, Moses will enter into what we would consider legislation by talking about the importance of following the law and not to transgress the boundaries of the law, to not add to or take away from what is commanded, that what happened to Baal Peor was a warning for Israel, that Israel's laws are superior, that they need to remember when they heard God on Sinai, that they didn't see a form, so they shouldn't make an image of a god or worship any created thing. He talks again about his sentence, that they're not to forget God. He is concerned later generations will make images. He also wants to point out how Israel's deliverance was unique and how God communicated with them, and that Exodus is in fact a demonstration that Yahweh is in fact God. At this time, he also established the cities of refuge in the Transjordan. I mean, there's also even a description of the land of the Transjordan. In chapter 5, we revisit the Ten Commandments, where we have the restatement of the Ten Commandments as God reestablishes a covenant with Israel, how the people did not want to hear God's voice any longer, and Moses proved to be the intermediary between God and the people, and why they need to keep God's ways. In chapters 6 through 8, we have what Israel must hear, that they need to hear God's instruction. In verse 4, we have the Shema, which is the Hebrew for hear, the great declaration that the Israelites would later chant and is very fundamental to Israelite theology. Hear, O Israel, Yahweh is our God, Yahweh is one. You must love Yahweh your God with your whole mind, whole being, and your strength. In Deuteronomy 6, 4 through 5. You've probably heard of that before. A very, very common, very important passage. They are to be devoted to God's instruction and to recite it, contemplate it, instruct their children in it. They should not forget God when they come into the land. And idolatry is again condemned. They should not test God. Instead, they should do what he says and dispossess the nations. And to explain to children about the laws of God. This is also where he will command in chapter 7, the destruction of the Canaanites, not to integrate with them. That God did not choose Israel because of how great they were, but because of how small they were. And that's why they need to do God's will. If they do so, they'll be blessed. They do not need to fear the nations, but instead what God might do. He talks about in chapter 8 how they experienced the discipline of God in the 40 years of the wilderness and how God provided for them. Verse 3, of course, that he fed them with manna to teach you that humankind cannot live by bread alone, but also by everything that comes from the mouth of Yahweh. Very, very powerful passage, an important one as well. He will then proceed to talk about the good land God is giving them and the warning to not forget about God when they are satisfied with the blessings of the land. In chapter 9, he will talk about the stubbornness of Israel and how God's going to dispossess the nations before them, but not because Israel's so righteous. It's because the Canaanites have been quite sinful, and God had made promises to the fathers of the Israelites. He reminded them what happened to the golden calf. Other incidents of rebellion and stubbornness in the wilderness are also recounted to keep that in mind so that they do not forget the way they had been. Chapters 10 and 11, we've got some of the statutes of God, some of the commandments he has. The recreation of the tablets of the 10 words are recounted, talking about the Ark and the Levites for a moment, that they are to possess the land, the obligation that Israel has to God, his greatness, that they need to show love because he has loved them. They should not be stubborn. They need to love God. They need to consider again what God did to Pharaoh and Dathan and Abiram and Exodus and in Numbers. To keep the law, to gain the land and keep the land. And the land is described in chapter 11. And the blessings are given if Israel is going to be obedient. Idolatry is again condemned. That it's important for them to keep the law, meditate on it, speak on it. And that they will gain and keep the land if they maintain the law and the boundaries of that land. And that they should stand on Ebal and Gerizim and set forth the cursings and the blessings of the covenant on the respective mountains. From chapters 12 through 15, we see exhortations about being a holy and separate nation. They need to destroy pagan altars to make appropriate sacrifices at the tabernacle, and they are not to sacrifice anywhere else. They can eat meat elsewhere. They should not eat blood. They need to bring tithes and their offerings and to bring them and enjoy them in the tabernacle and to make provision for the Levite. They should not try to figure out information with the Canaanite deities to start serving Yahweh in ways like that. They should not depart from God's ways to the right or the left. The prophets should not be listened to if what they try to induce you to serve other gods. This is, in fact, a test for Israel. You need to stone such a person. And even family members or close associates who would incite you to commit idolatry should be stoned. Israel should fear and do not do such things. And if there is a city that some have incited to commit idolatry, it should be investigated. And if it's true, they should devote that city to destruction. They should put it under the ban. And they need to do God's will. That's in chapter 13, some challenging exhortations there. Israel is a chosen people. They should not cut themselves or make themselves bald. All kinds of listing of clean and unclean foods are given. And the importance of the tithing of the produce, the care for the Levite, and that every third year tithes should go for the Levites and the dispossessed. Beginning of chapter 15, he talks about the Sabbath year release, that there should not be poverty in the land if the people follow God, that they should assist their fellow Israelites in needs, that care should be made for Israelites who are debt slaves, The firstborn should be dedicated. They should not. When it comes to the animals, from animals, they should eat them before God. They should be unblemished. They cannot eat his blood. In chapter 16, all the festivals are laid out: Passover, Feast of Unleavened Bread, Feast of Weeks, Booths. The presentation of men three times yearly before Yahweh is listed out there in Deuteronomy 16, 16, and 17, which will be the basis upon which they will continue to come to Jerusalem when the temple is built there. Then, the end of the section, there should be justice shown. They should not build Asherahs in their communities. Most of the rest of Deuteronomy, from chapter 17 through 26, is looking at when they're in the land of Israel, the kind of legislation they should maintain, and they should observe. So they should sacrifice the proper animals. They should stone idolaters. That difficult cases of homicide should be brought to the tabernacle, and their decision there is final. When they have a king, there's guidelines given about the fact they should have a copy of the law. They need to remain humble. The Levites and their portion are discussed, and the condemnation, destruction of the abominations of the Canaanites is again imposed upon them. And of course, in chapter 18, we got this validation of the prophet. The prophet's words are true if they come, what they say and prophesize comes about. And of course, the promise is also made that Yahweh your God will raise up for you a prophet like me from among you, from your fellow Israelites. You must listen to him, which of course would be seen as fulfilled in Jesus. There are cities of refuge established in chapter 19. And what the explanation of the manslayer. Situation of the manslayer and what he is to do, the factor not to move landmarks and to not allow just one witness, that everything needs to be established by two or three witnesses, that there are consequences, there are disastrous ones for false witness. Chapter 20, who should go out to war in terms of who should and should not fight, that peace should be offered, and if it's refused, to storm the city, to kill all the men and take everything else. However, the Canaanites, they are to devote to the man and destroy them, so Israel will not be tempted. They should cut down trees. They should not cut down for a siege trees that are good for food. In chapter 21, you've got blood guilt issues and what to do if there is a man found dead in a field and who needs to make sacrifice to atone for the blood guilt. There's also guidelines for taking your prisoner of war as a wife. And how, if there is a situation of bigamy, the inheritance should be divided. And that if you have a disobedient son, how you would stone him. And at the end of chapter 21, that somebody who commits a crime and you hang the corpse on a tree, you must not allow the body to remain all night because anyone left exposed on a tree is cursed by God. And the cursed is the one who hangs on a tree will become very prominent when we talk about Jesus. Especially Peter will make constant reference to this allusion here in Deuteronomy. In chapter 22, there's the talk of restoring a neighbor's property, that women should not wear men's clothing and vice versa. You should not eat the mother and the eggs of a bird. You should intermix seeds or animals and plowing or cloth types or tassels, and you also should have tassels on your garments. There are guidelines in chapter 22 if a man has questioned the virginity of his bride. There's also a provision to condemn and stone adulterers. And in chapter 22, there's guidelines for rape cases, sometimes very important, and also you should not marry your stepmother. In chapter 23, we begin by talking about those who are cut off from the assembly of Yahweh, those with crushed severed genitals, of illegitimate birth, Ammonites, Moabites for generations, so on and so forth. There's greater favor given, however, to Edom and to Egypt than to from Ammon and Moab, and that's all laid out there in chapter 23. The importance of being clean in the camp is listed in chapter 23. As well, and what you do with escaped slaves, that you shouldn't have cult prostitutes. You should have no interest on loans to Israelites, but you can charge foreigners interest, that they should fulfill whatever vows they make, that you have provisions about picking neighbors' grapes or grain, and that you need to be careful about such things, and that you make sure that there are provisions for the widow, the orphan, and so on and so forth. We have in chapter 24, very important, the marriage provision, right, that there can be divorce, and there's all kinds of argumentation about Deuteronomy 24, 1 through 4, West and Matthew 19, and in parallel passages. We also see in chapter 24, guidelines for the newly married, for death for kidnappers, and guidelines for skin disease. pledges and how to be fair with hired people, how you show justice and benevolence to those who are dispossessed. There's punishments for wrongdoing in chapter 25, not to muzzle the ox while he is threshing out the grain, which will be used in the New Testament to talk about how laborers are worthy of their wages. We have levirate marriage described in Deuteronomy 25. That situation in which a brother dies without children and his brother needs to take his wife and have children through her for his brother who has died by proxy. Punishment is also established for women who puts their hand on a man in an inappropriate place. The importance of having fair balances. The exhortation, again, that Amalek should be exterminated. The guidelines for offering first fruits when they enter the land, chapter 26. And the tithe offering for those who are dispossessed and why they need to follow these rules to make them a treasured possession and a holy people. Chapter 27 and 28, Moses will go through blessings and cursings, that they should erect stones with the law written on it, and an altar to be erected with offerings offered on it, dedicating Israel to God. Again, the blessings and cursings from Gerizim and Ebal. The cursings should be given the call and response. The blessings, if Israel obeys God, is listed in chapter 28, verses 1 through 14, but then verses 15 through 68, much greater detail, the curses, and what will happen if they do not follow God. Chapter 29, Israel is to remember what it saw and how no Yahweh is God, how they dispossessed Sihon and Og. And God makes a covenant with Israel that Egypt is an example of idolatry they should not follow. They need to take care of against idolaters who are present, lest the nation be condemned. And the desolation that they will experience will be a testament to the nations. And then verse 29 of chapter 29, the secret things belong to Yahweh our God, but those that are revealed belong to us and our descendants forever, that we might obey all the words of this law. Again, a very famous passage. At the beginning of chapter 30, Moses anticipates that the people will commit idolatry and will be cast off and exiled from the land. And he also anticipates that God will restore them and bless them in the land. And then he will talk in verses 11 through 14 about how the commandments are not far away, but near, and they are able to follow them. And that, in fact, life and death are being set before Israel. And he encourages them to choose life and follow the commandments that God has given. Then, chapters 31 through 33 are Moses' ultimately final words and blessings, that he will die here at 120 years old, that Joshua will lead the people into the land, and God is going to defeat their enemies. This is where Moses writes down the law, and he gives it to the Levites and the elders for safekeeping and to be read. And they're supposed to read it to all the people on the Feast of the Booths of the Sabbath year. And God would then commission Joshua. He predicts the faithlessness of Israel. And there's this song that is to be sung that is a witness against Israel. And that is the Song of Moses that's here in chapter 32. And it's how God is great. Israel commits idolatry and is stubborn. And then disaster will overtake Israel. The end of chapter 32, Moses will go up to see the land before he dies. And then chapter 33, Moses will have blessings for each tribe of Israel. And then in chapter 34, Moses will ultimately go up on Mount Nebo to the top of Pisgah. He will see the land of Canaan, and there he will die. That he is buried by God in an undisclosed location, and Israel will mourn. This time we're told Joshua will take over, and that no prophet ever again arose in Israel like Moses, who knew Yahweh face to face. He did all the signs and wonders as Yahweh had sent him to do in the land of Egypt to Pharaoh and all his servants and the whole land, and he displayed great power and awesome might in view of all Israel. And thus is the end of Deuteronomy. Thus is the end of the Torah, the Pentateuch. And all has now been revealed to Israel in terms of the law. As we've seen, there's a lot of very important things going on here in Deuteronomy. A lot of times Moses will give explanations about things that in ways that aren't necessarily explained other places. You see a very strong concern with God's holiness, the sanctity of the people, concern about participation with the nations, and the idolatry that will infect Israel, and a presaging, a foreshadowing, a recognition of what Israel is going to do in developing the kings, in committing the idolatry, and the experience of exile, and that God would be faithful and would restore his people. And so there's a lot going on in Deuteronomy. And he wants his people to follow the law, to not get complacent and arrogant, not to turn away from him. And there's a lot that we can therefore take away from it as well. Let us, as we have opportunity, strive to serve God in humility, looking to him so that we can obtain life in him. So glad you've joined us. If you have any questions or comments or thoughts about Deuteronomy, we'd love for you to let us know in the comments and continue our conversation. I'm Ethan, work with the Adventist Church of Christ. We are a non-denominational in Los Angeles of Christ to glorify God and to encourage one another and everyone in the gospel of Jesus. If there's any way we can be of service to you, if you'd like to study the Bible or have a Bible correspondence course, if you have a prayer request, if you'd like to meet with us, any way we can be of service, please reach out to us at adventistchurchofchrist.org. You can also find us on social media throughout at Venice Church of Christ or at Venice Church. We again thank you, and may the Lord bless and keep you until we're able to meet again.